Good evening. Welcome to the Solari Report. Today is August 14th, 2014. I'm Catherine Austin Fitz, and I'm delighted you could join me this evening. Tonight, our theme is the power of law. I and my companies are subject to many different federal and state tax laws. In combination, it can get very complicated. Sometimes I find myself spending more money calculating and filing taxes than I owe in taxes, and that time and expense can be frustrating. It was happening this week, and someone pointed out how hard it is to take the law seriously when parts of the government, as well as many large and small institutions and people, are behaving in ways that are in clear violation of the law, some completely lawless. Lawlessness is, in fact, the most destructive tax of all. The advantage of being lawful in a lawless world is you attract networks of people who will also do their best to be competent and act with integrity, and the combination means you can get things done based on high trust at high speed. That's the pathway through in the future, so lawfulness can be a powerful attractor, and I recommend it to you. I posted a commentary on the same topic called The Power of Law, and I pointed out, it's very much related to the divide and conquer thing we've been talking about, is we're watching an effort to divide people up according to all sorts of groupings, whether it's nationality, whether it's race or ethnic background, sex. And in fact, the real divide right now is between those who believe in being lawful and they believe in law, and those who don't and aren't willing to practice it. And so the question is, we don't want to get trapped in all those boxes. We want to find the other lawful people and get into cahoots with them. So don't get tricked by that divide and conquer. Money and markets, it was a good week for equities. The S&P was up about 2% for the week. Emerging markets up a little bit more, about 2.7%. Bonds and gold were relatively flat. We all keep waiting for the proverbial summer stock market correction, but it has not yet appeared. The market is long overdue. The U.S. market, equity market, is long overdue for a 10 to 20% correction, as we've talked about in our equity overviews. And there's plenty of news in the financial and geopolitical situation that you would think would inspire, let that summer correction happen. Again, more than 90% of the historical gains in the stock market have occurred not in the summer. That's why the saying, go away in May, sell in May and go away. Several studies came out this week that make it harder to believe that the consumer is going to be supporting corporate income. We see the 2013 Federal Reserve report on the economic well-being of U.S. households. It reports that 25% of U.S. households are just getting by and 13% are struggling. I would say those numbers are lower than what I would expect. Another study showing that the replacement jobs coming into the economy that are sort of picking up employment show a 23% decrease in wages. So that's a significant reduction in income. 24% of Americans have education-related debt, either for themselves or someone in their family. I posted an article on the blog about the states which have the highest delinquent rates among the population. The 10 states have approximately 40 to 47% of those people with a credit history or credit score show themselves to be delinquent on their debt. 40 to 47%. That is an enormous number. If you look at the number of American households that are struggling under a debt load or dependent on government checks, you begin to understand how dependent the population is and how much easier they are to control. One of the things that's very interesting, if you look at the numbers, I've done the calculations of how much the missing money from the federal government breaks down to a per person amount by state. And if you look at the amount of money that people from all these states have been paying to the federal government that go to agencies that refuse to comply with the basic laws that relate to financial management, including having audited financial statements, or the money that's been announced to go missing, it's way greater than their non-mortgage debt. So if you look at all of these debt delinquencies, you can explain them by the amount of tax money that's been disappearing down the black budget. So I really encourage you to watch my speech from the Secret Space Program Conference, because that's one of the reasons I focus so much on the missing money, because it's literally this machinery of a scheme which is putting Americans into debt and sort of liquidating the financial wealth of households. There's a new book that's going online, and I posted a blog post to encourage you to take a look at it. It looks very intriguing. I've read the part that's posted so far. It's called J.P. Madoff, The Unholy Alliance Between America's Biggest Bank and America's Biggest Crook. It's written by two attorneys who represent many of the Madoff victims and come to me highly recommended. And one of the things the foreword in the first chapter point out, beyond a shadow of a doubt, Madoff couldn't have gotten to first base without J.P. Morgan Chase facilitating essentially the Ponzi scheme. And it looks like they're going to nail it. One page that they put up is a graphic. It's in the form of a wheel, and it has all the different categories of different settlements for financial frauds that J.P. Morgan Chase has entered into, totaling $28.9 billion. Having it all there, you can click around and look at all the different statements. It's very powerful. The total number of settlements, $28.9 billion. And I was really struck this week, so I sat down to do the number between the amount of the quantitative easing by the Fed and then the amount of the financial settlements by J.P. Morgan and the other big banks. Again, we're seeing another big round of settlements coming into the election. And then the announcement of the New York State surplus of $4 billion. And I just wanted to walk you through a little rosy, because it's very rare that people connect the dots, and these things are very much connected. So we have the Fed essentially printing money out of thin air to buy $3 trillion of bonds, including mortgage-backed bonds, including commercial mortgage-backed bonds from the big banks. As you know, I think that a lot of those bonds, that they were probably buying them at par, and the bonds were worth at best 10 to 50 cents on the dollar. So let's just be generous and say that when the Fed bought $3 trillion of bonds, those bonds were only worth $1.5 trillion. And so the banks got essentially a $1.5 trillion windfall. Or maybe you just want to say they had a $1 trillion windfall. If you look at that amount of subsidy versus the settlements they're paying, the settlements are relatively tiny. So in fact, the $28.9 billion that J.P. Morgan or some of the others paying is a very small percentage of the subsidy that probably came through. And I would contest the debasement of everyone's savers all over the world is basically allowing the Fed to create money and channel it into the banks. And then the banks proceed to pay off all these settlements. Now, where are those settlements going? Interestingly enough, and New York is an early example, that $4 billion went into the state surplus because they approved their budget in the summer. That money's now available for summer. I mean, they approved their budget in the summer. That money's now available for spending. Actually, a lot of the money that came through in this round to New York State came from the BNP settlement, not from J.P. Morgan Chase, but it's a series of different banks, the big one being the BNP. But essentially what we've got is this money is flowing into campaign coffers, not through the politician's campaign, but it is available to the politicians to hand out, sort of like Petri's. So we see the $4 billion flow into the New York State budget. And the governor of New York running for re-election is now running around handing all this money out. Now, why is this particularly important to note? The current governor of the state of New York is Andrew Cuomo, the former secretary of HUD, who was so instrumental with Bob Rubin and Alan Greenspan in engineering the housing bubble. And so here you have a politician who literally has built their political career on engineering the housing bubble, receiving portions of the settlements and using that money to then proceed to buy themselves another election. So to watch the ring around the rosy between the Fed, the big banks, and the politicians is particularly galling. Now, we know that we're coming into another round of big mortgage settlements, including the Bank of America is expected, Goldman Sachs is expected. And those monies are going to go into the federal government before the beginning, the finalization of the budget in September, and the new budget kicks in on October 1st, which means Congress and the administration will be able to do the same thing Cuomo's doing right now, which is run around during the elections and hand all that money out to support incumbents. So we're literally watching a process where people are getting bought with their own money. So if you're in New York and you lost your home to foreclosure, you're literally voting for somebody who's financing their campaign through the taxpayers and through the profits that come from your foreclosure. It's pretty galling. And yet we see Cuomo's high in the polls. So the question is, when are we going to get smart about this? But expect to see more settlements coming into the campaign, and expect to see Congress and the administration have the benefit of that money as they go out to the elections for November. The Mexican president has signed a landmark energy reform into law that's going to permit outside investment coming into Mexico. It'll be the big global oil and gas companies from all over the world, but it will certainly include plenty from America. And it's another sign of many of the steps being taken for rapid integration of the North American economy with Mexico. It's going to keep on going. Up on the blog is my latest donation, for the Border Patrol agent who was killed fishing with his family. And I note one of the reasons his family is alive: his mother had an assault weapon with her, and the family was all caring, and they were able to essentially, because they were caring, scare off the people who tried to rob them and who killed the patrol agent. And it's another very important story of why I think gun control can never happen in this country. But it's one you want to note, because I assure you, one of the things that stands between organized crime and really raping this country the way that Russia was raped in the 90s is the fact that we are very well armed. I just finished interviewing Zach Taylor, who's going to be on the Saleri Report. We're going to run that interview in 2 weeks. He's the charter member of the National Association of Former Border Patrol Agents. We had a great discussion about what's going on in the border. It's very important that you should hear that one, because I think what's going on is going to disturb you, and I think it's something we have to think about. I posted another commentary in the blog called Morphic Resonance and the Invasive Push for Invisible Control, about the efforts around the world to sort of destroy local fields and the importance of divide and conquer tactics to facilitate that going on. And again, just to underscore, don't fall into the divide and conquer. It's very easy to do. Another video up on the blog is a Russian analyst talking about Putin and what he's up to, and the importance of, and this is a comment I've emphasized many, many times. If Putin is going to accomplish what he's seeking to do, he's got to set out new rules for the BRIC nations as to how they can operate in a successful way outside the dollar system. One of the reasons that we are all channeling into the existing systems is we haven't sat down and set up the protocols and standards for the new systems. And as it applies to Putin and the BRICS, so it applies to everyone else who's trying to encourage decentralization. And it underscores the absolute importance of having to do more than just be against a system, of having to sit down, take out a blank piece of paper and say, okay, how do we develop a new system? Here come the robots. Several postings in the science and technology section on the developments that are going on in robots. The Japanese have announced they're going to have an Olympics for robots. Japanese very much in the forefront of robotics developments, but I expect that we are going to start seeing in our daily lives more and more robots integrated into the economy and into retail businesses of all sorts, including fast food restaurants. So you want to familiarize yourself, because this is absolutely coming. The hypocrisy of the week, and this, there's so many, you don't know It's hard to pick out one that's extraordinary, but this is the SEC charges Kansas with failing to disclose their pension risks. Can you imagine this? So the federal government, which has yet to produce audited financial statements and has the most mind-boggling pension risks of any governmental entity in North America, is accusing Kansas for failing to disclose. And if that's not the pot calling the kettle black, I don't know what is. Our hero this week, and also the movie of the week, I'm going to talk about them together, is the movie comes from the PBS series Secrets of the Dead, and it's called The Man Who Saved the World. And it's about a Soviet Navy fleet commander, submarine commander, whose name is Vasily Arkhipov. And he served as deputy commander on the K-19 during the nuclear incident that was the basis of the movie K-19, The Widowmaker. And he then prevented the launch of a nuclear torpedo during the Cuban Missile Crisis. The title of the movie comes from a statement by the U.S. National Archive director, who once said a guy called Vasily Arkhipov saved the world. The year after the documentary was made, another one was made by a group, including Kevin Costner, about a Russian officer who declined to retaliate after receiving a false alarm from the Soviet nuclear early warning system in 1983. Both of them are very inspiring, and it just goes to show you that one human being can make an enormous, enormous difference. This was a naval commander who made an extraordinary difference, not just once, but twice. And yet most of us have never heard of him. I didn't hear of him until I came upon the documentary. It's a very inspiring thing to watch, and I recommend it to you, particularly those I'm very interested in what happened during the 1962 confrontation between Cuba and Kennedy and what it had to do with resulting in Kennedy's death a year later. I should also note that Robin Williams has passed away this week. He was an extraordinary person, actor, and comedian, and I welcome prayers for him and his family. Certainly somebody who did great good as he came into this world. We have many questions to ask Catherine again. Let me answer a few of them. One subscriber wrote in and asked about a very strange website about a North Carolina legal issue as it relates to the police, and I've tried to investigate it and can't really find an answer. I'll keep looking, but I can't promise. Second question, I ask this knowing there is no totally safe bank, but if you were going to put your money in a bank, where would you research the financial strength of various institutions, WEIS ratings? If you go to our bank local page at Solari.com, we link to the WEIS ratings or the WEIS ratings, which I think are useful, but I often find them either out of date or off. So I think it's imperative to read the financial statements and take a hard look at the financials and check recommendations, because remember, the financials are only good as the quality of the people who govern, own, and manage the institution. So without knowing that the leadership is excellent, to me, the financials and the ratings don't necessarily mean that much. But I think the combination of those three things, you usually get a pretty good handle. I really encourage everyone to walk into banks, talk to people, ask questions. If a bank won't easily give you their financials, you don't want to bank there. So I'm always amazed at how a personal visit and a personal conversation with them about the bank can tell somebody, even someone who doesn't know finances at all, can get a very good intuitive feeling for the quality of the institution and the quality of the people who manage it. Next question. This article tells us that Facebook will now be requiring its users to download a new mobile app to send messages to their Facebook friends on their mobile devices. In addition, as part of the terms of service, you need to agree that Facebook can record audio, video, and take pictures through your mobile device, send messages to your contacts, and call them directly and gain access to all of your communication records with everyone you've ever contacted through your mobile device. This is so frightening. I don't even know what to say. We posted in Let's Go to the Movies a documentary called Terms and Conditions, which I strongly recommend you watch. I think you know how I view Facebook. To me, Facebook is simply a mechanism whereby the intelligence agencies get the general population to update their dossiers and do it in a way that is profitable, as opposed to having paying contractors to do it in a way that is expensive. So this is kind of a for-profit way of keeping all your dossiers on the population updated. The notion that Facebook or that any of us should give a power to a private company, one that is as this porous with your data as is being described in the article that they linked to, and I put it up on the blog, is very, very frightening to me. So you need to make sure you and the members of your family that use Facebook don't do it through your mobile device. And I would simply say, I don't have a Facebook page. I got talked into it once by a group of subscribers, and once we got above a certain number of people following us on Facebook, the Facebook account got hacked, and that was it. I said, I'm off Facebook. So just beware when you get on Facebook, you're doing something potentially very dangerous. Last night, one of our subscribers had asked me to read Against Our Better Judgment, and I described briefly some of what I learned when I wrote the commentary, The Power of Law. It's by Alison Weir regarding the U.S. role in the creation of the State of Israel. Fascinating book, very well written, pulls together a lot of interesting source material and makes it very clear that we knew all along that when you turn over a country that's lived in by one people to another people who then immigrate in massive amounts and genocide the first people, this was all to be expected when it started. Now, if you live in the United States, that's the same way the United States got created. So I don't want to be the pot calling the kettle black, because taking over a country and genociding the people who are there is a very common theme throughout history. But Weir makes clear, and Against Our Better Judgment, that this was all known and expected when Israel was founded. So this is a problem that's been with us a long time. And if you want to understand the roots of what's happening in the Gaza today, I recommend it to you. Another question from a subscriber: do we have Solaris subscribers in their area? Normally, we try and introduce people through the luncheons as we go around the country, but this is a very distinct, this is an island in British Columbia, so I will check and see if we have some others. We may be able, it's small enough that we may be able to do something quietly by email, so let's check. Our interview this week is with Franklin Sanders, and as you know, it's always wonderful to talk with him. This is a very important interview. Franklin updates us on the precious metals market, and then we talk for most of the interview about the coming Fed taper in October and what it means and what are the signs that we're watching the institutional market and the fixed income market anticipate real liquidity problems ahead and steps that they're taking to do it, what it means to you and me, and what we need to do to be prepared for this. And I think this is an extremely important topic. We have been living now for literally since 2008 with massive intervention to provide liquidity in the markets. And I think the effort to really withdraw finally from this extraordinary experiment in financial methadone, as I described it in the interview, is going to be a very, it's going to be a very unusual and unique process. And we need to be ready to bob and wheel. Somebody, I was on Coast to Coast the other night, and I said, we're sailing around the rocks. So we're sailing around the rocks, this is one interview I strongly recommend to you. And of course, it's always fun and a pleasure to talk to Franklin. But we did talk about the sort of where we sit in the precious metals market. Franklin is pretty confident that we're we've seen the bottom. I'm much less confident, but I think we both agree that the chances that the primary trend in the gold and silver market will reassert is very good. So in closing, coming up, we have a great lineup, and I'm very excited about it. Next week, I'm going to be talking with John Rappaport about inspired by the Ebola media, about pandemics, politics, and unanswered questions. There's no one better, in my opinion, on the planet to talk about this topic. This is one that John has spent many decades investigating. He knows a great deal about it. He's been doing a lot of coverage of what's been going on in the media with Ebola. And so I think this is very important. If those drumbeats continue as they appear to be doing after the U.S.-African summit, I think we need to unpack this one, and you need to think about what this could mean to you. So I'm very pleased that John said he would do that. That's next week. Then Border Wars with Zach Taylor on August 28th. A very fine Border Patrol officer did intelligence on the border, the Southwest border, and he is now one of the charter members of the National Association of Border Patrol Officers. We did a long interview. It's a long one, but it's a good one, and we will be posting that on August 28th. And then, believe it or not, inspired by my interview with Zach Taylor, I called Ann Williamson, Wall Street Journal reporter and then freelance investigative reporter, who wrote the definitive book on what happened in Russia in the 1990s and gave testimony called The Rape of Russia. Great effort was made to suppress her book, Contagion. She finally published some of it as a serial form out of London with an investment firm. That's where I met her. And I want her to join us and talk about Russia and the Ukraine backstory and what it has to do with what's going on in Gaza and what's going on in the border, the Southwest border. And I think it's a very important backstory to both what's happening in the Ukraine today and what's happening in the United States. So September 4th, Ann Williamson on Russia and the Ukraine backstory. So we'll be digging in and looking at a lot of real politics over the next 3 weeks. And I think that is an invaluable series to understand what's going on in the economy today. So until August 21st with John Rappaport, please remember, don't worry about whether or not there is a conspiracy. If you're not in a conspiracy, you need to start one. Ladies and gentlemen, good night and good luck.